Now we're holding on Kuf Yud Zayin, Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. We started talking about yesterday about the various opinions about how Eretz Yisrael was divided among the people who came into Eretz Yisrael. We had the opinion that it went strictly according to those who left Mitzrayim, and then we would say each of them got a portion, and then that portion would just be divided up among his children. We had the opinion the other way around that it went primarily according to those who came into Eretz Yisrael, but we had Hamesim Yoshim Asachayim, so it would be in effect returned to their parents who left Mitzrayim, and then redivided. You even have Rashi on the Pasuk, mentions three generations involved, although as we touched on briefly in Tosfos yesterday, Tosfos doesn't really like that explanation. And then we had the opinion of Reb Shimon Elazar, who says that basically it just goes according to that la'elu v'la'elu neschalka aretz, that it depends. You either got a portion by virtue of leaving Mitzrayim, or by your parents leaving Mitzrayim, or by you coming into Eretz Yisrael. So as long as either your parent was 20 when you left Mitzrayim, or you were 20 when you came into Eretz Yisrael, either way you're getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael. So we went through the various opinions about that. So now the Gemara brings a Simon Larav Slovcha Yosef Ichbo Menashe Yechoshev. These are, as usual, mnemonics for a key word from each of the following statements or questions that the Gemara is going to give. So starting with Omale Rapapala Abaya. So it starts, Rav Papa asks Abaya, Bishlema Lamanda Omale Yotzi Mitzayim Neschalka Oretz. I can understand easily, according to the opinion, that Eretz Yisrael was divided up based on those who left Mitzrayim, meaning, in other words, then that, again, you could have that one person left Mitzrayim and had a, and didn't, and died in the Midbar and had a lot of children who did make it into Eretz Yisrael, and vice versa, you'd have somebody else who left Mitzrayim and had very few, if any, children who made it into Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, so that's the pasuk says, Hainu Dichtiv, L'Rav Tauber Nachalosei, V'Lama'at Tamit Nachalosei. So that explains, the pasuk therefore says that, For the larger group, you increase their nachla. For the smaller group, you decrease their nachla. Meaning, in other words, so fine. So we're saying that, so let's say, for example, that Rashbam brings from Sifri. Let's say, for example, you have a person who left Mitzrayim, and at the time he had 10 children, and then 5 of them passed away in the Midbar, and they only have the other 5. So therefore, so those 5 inherit what the 10 would have. In other words, the 5 of them are inheriting what their brothers would have gotten. So therefore, each of them is getting twice the portion that anybody else would. And then vice versa, if you had a larger number of people when they left Mitzrayim. Tosfos points out, actually, Tosfos has a long discussion about it, that works out as far as the Larav Tav Nachlosa, but how do you explain the other part of the Pasuk, how do you explain the Lama'at Tamit Nachlosa, where the Pasuk continues, that then when you have a smaller number of people, Then you give them a lesser portion, one way or the other. Either all of them make an entirety Yisrael, and each of them is getting a portion, or you have that they're inheriting their brother's portions. So Tosfos explains. Tosfos agrees, of course, they're not going to argue with the Sifri. It's a Medrash of Tanoim. They're not going to argue with it, but they explain the Sifri differently. So Larav Tav Nachlosei would be, again, if he left Mitzrayim with 10 children, and all of them being over 20 years old, all of them passed away in the Midbar, but meanwhile the father then had another 5 children in the Midbar, and those children not being 20 years old at the time of the Meraglim, they made it into Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, each of those five is getting his own portion because he came into Eretz Yisrael, as well as he gets a portion from one of his brothers, who passed away. And Lama'at Tamet Nachlosei would be the other way around. A person left Mitzrayim with five children, all of them five sons, all of them passed away in the Midbar, and then he had 10 more in the Midbar. So each of them would get a lesser portion. So still the same 5 versus 10 that the Sifri says, but Tosfos is understanding it differently than Ashram. Anyway, so that's easy enough to understand if we say that we go according to Yotz Mitzrayim. El Lamanda Amla Boya Oretz, but if you say that Eretz Yisrael is being divided based on those who came into Eretz Yisrael, then my lorav tarba nachlosa. Then what do you mean with tarbu? It says in the Gemara, the actual pasuk says tarbeh. But anyway, my lorav tarba nachlosa. Then what do you mean that the larger number? What do you mean that the larger the number, the more the portion? What do you mean? It doesn't go according to who left Mitzrayim. Then it goes according to who came into Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, in our scenarios over here, people who were born in the Midbar, people who were born and passed away in the Midbar respectively, then it wouldn't matter. So according to that opinion, what would that pasuk mean? Now, the Rashbam says the kasha is really just, obviously the Tana knew the pasuk. So the question is, how do we, when we're learning the Tana's opinion that says that we go according to the Boy Oretz, the Schalka Oretz, to be exact, we said that we go according to Boy Oretz and then we give it back to their ancestors and we divide it according to them. Then how do we understand the pasuk according to him? In other words, the kasha is a little bit different than usually when the Gemara asks kasha is like, isn't this a contradiction to the Tana's opinion? Here it's more not that we know, obviously the Tana knew the pasuk, he has to explain it somehow, but how do we understand the pasuk according to that Tana? In fact, usually we have the rule when the Gemara says kasha rather than tiyuvta means there is an answer, we just don't know it right now. So that would be because we're not using it to try to contradict this Tana. We're just asking how would this Tana understand the pasuk, or how would we understand the pasuk according to that Tana?
Why is it a contradiction?
Because on the face of it, when the pasuk is saying "larav tarba nachlosa," is saying the larger the group, the more you give them an inheritance. But if you're saying that, that you go according to those who went into Eretz Yisrael, then what's larav tarba nachlosa? Then each individual is getting his own portion. So therefore, it's not like one person or one group is getting a larger amount than the other. So in fact, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh on the pasuk says that we could for enfer, according to this opinion, we could say l'rav and l'ma'at doesn't mean on the individual level, it means on the level of the family. You have in the psukim over there in the census in Parshas Pinchas, right before these psukim, l'rav tarba nachlosei, you have the pasuk. It lists 57 different families. There are Shevet Reuven has 4 families, and Shevet Shimon has however many, and so forth. So the idea would be within each family, l'rav and l'ma'at. It depends on the size of the family when they're coming into Eretz Yisrael, how much of a portion they get into Eretz Yisrael. So he says that the Gemara could have used it. So again, when the Gemara says kasha, doesn't mean that we've schlugged up that tana. It just means that right offhand, we don't have an answer, but that could be an answer that we're not talking about on the individual level. Rather, we're talking about on the when I say family, it's more like a clan, like a large, a large subdivision of the Shevet. We're talking about on that level.
On the level of the family. You can talk on the level of the Shevet. You can talk on the level of both. I don't see where the contradiction is.
So the Gemara was bothered by, we assume that la'rav and la'ma'at meant at the individual family level. And the question is, given that, so it doesn't matter, in other words, whether in a particular family you have one person who left Mitzrayim and then had 10 children in the Midbar and, or had 5 children in the Midbar or whatever, either way, if we say the Yotz, either way, if we say l'boi Mitzrayim, if we say l'boi Yotz Neschalka, that it was divided based on those who came into Eretz Yisrael, wouldn't matter, each one is entitled to their own individual portion, which is why the Gemara had a cap. But so again, one possible answer is we're talking about at the level of the large subdivision of the Shevet, that a subdivision that has a larger number of people is therefore getting a larger amount of land than Eretz Yisrael. But again, the Gemara had left it as kasha without getting into that level of detail.
Mm-hmm.
The Gemara continues. Now Rapapa has another question for Abaya in this connection. I understand, according to the opinion, that Eretz Yisrael was divided up based on those who left Mitzrayim. Then we understand the complaint of Bnos Tzlafchad. So they're saying that Tzlafchad himself had left Mitzrayim, and therefore he's entitled to a share in Eretz Yisrael. Had he had boys, then they would yaush in his property. Now that he doesn't have boys, then they're saying what's going to happen to his property. Why should it be that instead the portion that he should have gotten in Eretz Yisrael, why should that go to his brothers or to whatever other collateral relative? But if you're saying that Eretz Yisrael was divided based on those who came into Eretz Yisrael, meaning those who were counted in the census, the fact is, Tzlafchad is no longer alive. His daughters are not counted in the census, because only the sons are counted. So, Elo Lamanda Amal Boy Aretz Amay Tzavchad. Then what are they complaining about? The fact is, Halesed Lishko. The fact is, Tzlafchad is no longer alive. He can't get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. And the Boy Aretz Nitna Aretz. So even if he had a son, the son wouldn't necessarily get anything by virtue of his father, because the son himself, only if he's above age. So they should be saying, not just that he doesn't have a son, but he doesn't have a son above 20 years old, they should be saying. So what do you mean? He doesn't have a son. Therefore, what's going to happen to his portion? What portion? The boy heart, the schalka heart. So the answer is, even according to that opinion, the boy Aretz and the Schalka Aretz, you could still say, fine, but they're still concerned about Ela L'Chazara. Even according to that opinion, the fact is, as we learned before, according to the opinion that the boy Aretz and the Schalka Aretz, we still say the fact is there was Hashem's promise to the Dura Midbar, that there was Hashem's promise before Yetzias Mitzrayim even, that they were going to get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. And so we said, according to that opinion, we have Chazara, that we take the portion that goes to their children and we return it to the parents who passed away in the Midbar and we redivide it. So there's still that factor. So there's still that factor. It still has to, we still have to return it to Chayfer, who was Slavchad's father, who was also one of those who left Mitzrayim, and then in turn it would go to his descendants, and Slavchad's daughters are included in that. The little benichse Chayfer, insofar as getting from Chayfer's portion. So therefore what they're saying is, yes, the boy Aretz and Schalka Aretz, and neither Chayfer nor Tzlafchad made it into Eretz Yisrael, but they're saying that by right, Tzlafchad himself, had he had a son, then that son would be inheriting, so then when Chayfer's sons divide up the portion in Eretz Yisrael, then it would go back to Chayfer and they would redivide it, and then from Chayfer it would go to all of his descendants. So then, therefore, our father Tzlafchad, having been a Bechur, would have gotten a double portion. And if Tzlafchad himself is not alive, but he has a son, then that son would inherit a double portion. So now he doesn't have a son, then what's going on over here? How comes it that, what our father would have gotten from Chayfer by means of Chazara, he or his descendants would have gotten it? And even after all they're saying, if our father had ever had a son, then even if that son had left sons or daughters, they would get it instead, as we learned as we had learned in previous Mishnayos, that if the son is no longer alive, then you go down the tree of his descendants. So they knew all of that, and therefore so they were pointing out that. problem is not, even if we say the boy or the schalka or it's, they're saying, but if we had brothers, then if we had brothers, those brothers maybe wouldn't be inheriting on their own, the boy or it's, but they would still, we would still have chazara, we would still return the nechosin, to Chefer, and then we divide it among his descendants accordingly, as we learned yesterday, and therefore our father or our father's sons or their descendants would have a portion, and now that he doesn't have any sons, what's going to happen? So it works out even if we say the boy or it's the Schalka or it's. Okay. In fact, the Rashbam points out later on when the Gemara analyzes the argument of Bnei Tzlochot in more detail, it mentions that they were chachmonius, they were smart in Torah, they were wise in Torah, and they knew a number of the dinim that we've already learned in our perek, including the point that if there was a son and he's since passed away, that his descendants inherit, they knew that concept already. Either because it had already been told as part of the Torah, or because they had figured it out logically. Okay. The Gemara continues, B'shleim l'manda omar l'yotzi mitzrayim, we can understand more easily the psukim according to the opinion that says that Eretz Yisrael was divided based on those who left Mitzrayim. And again, therefore, in other words, a person left Mitzrayim, it doesn't matter the fact that he himself didn't make it to Eretz Yisrael, doesn't even matter whether he has surviving children or sons of specifically above 20 years old who are in the second census who make it to Eretz Yisrael. Either way, the portion that he would have gotten is divided among his descendants. So if you say, then we understand the complaint of Bnei Yosef. In Sefer Yoshua, it tells, after they're in the process of dividing up Eretz Yisrael among the Shvatim, and Bnei Yosef come to Yoshua with a problem. They say that we don't have enough land in Eretz Yisrael, basically. They're saying that they're complaining, why are you giving us only one area in Eretz Yisrael? We're so numerous. So if we say the Yotzim Mitzrayim Mishalka Oretz Tichtiv, and the Pasuk says, Vaydabru Bnei Yosef, it says the children of Yosef spoke and complained to Yoshua. So now they're saying, now Shevet Yosef, in particular Shevet Menashe, increased an enormous amount in the Midbar, more than any other Shvat, more than any other Shevet. When they left Mitzrayim, the first census in Parashas Bamidbar counts Shevet Menashe as being 32,000 and some. By the time it comes to the second census in Parshas Pinchas, they're 52,000 and some, so they increased by over 20,000. So therefore, so now, if you say the Yotzim Mitzrayim, the Schalka Aretz, then you understand what's going on. So in other words, they had an unusual increase more than any other Shevet. So they're arguing that now the problem is that, so what is it then? So our fathers who left Mitzrayim altogether between them, the whole Shevet is getting only 32,000 and some portions. Now we have to redivide that among 52,000 people, and therefore each one is getting a smaller portion. But if you say that you go according to those who entered Eretz Yisrael, what's the problem? What are they complaining about? All of them got a portion because now you have 52,000 and some in the last census, and therefore, each one of them is getting a portion. The Rashbam points out later on in the Perek, we're going to discuss the point, which again, there's a further machlokas Rishonim about it between Rashi and the Ramban, whether in general, when we talk about that, when we talk about Eretz Yisrael was divided among the 12 Shvatim, do we say a larger Shevet got a larger portion? So that, for example, let's say Shevet Yehuda, which has 70,000 some people in each census, is going to get a larger territory in Eretz Yisrael than, let's say, Shevet Binyamin, which is 32,000, which is 32,000 in the first census, and about 35,000 in the second, or 35,000 in the second one, whatever. So then, if you're going to say that the larger the Shevet, the bigger the portion they get, well, then in that case, so then for sure there's no problem. Shevet Menashe now being 52,000 is going to get a relatively larger portion. So then there should be no problem at all. However, the Gemara later on is going to discuss that point. Is that so, or do we say that each Shevet received an equal size portion in Eretz Yisrael, meaning therefore that a more numerous Shevet, like Yehuda, each person is getting a smaller plot of land, than for example a small shevet like Binyamin, well then in that case then you could understand shevet, then you can understand shevet Yosef's complaint in a different vein. They could say in general on the they could say on the shevet level, why are we getting a portion equal to each of the other shvatim when after all we have so many more than many of the other shvatim? However, the Rashbam points out the Gemara doesn't want to bring that up as an answer because we're going to discuss that point later on in the parak, and there's going to be a machlokas on that topic. So we on that point. So right now we want to understand according to both possible opinions as far as that, but we want to understand within what we're working with over here, whether you Yotze Mitzrayim or the Boya Aretz, the Schalka Aretz, that each portion, the size of each person's portion within the Shevet is determined by who left Mitzrayim or who came into Eretz Yisrael. So if you're going to say that, then if you're going to say it's divided according to those who came into Eretz Yisrael, then what's their problem? There's more of them now, so okay, each of them is going to get a larger portion within their Shevet territory. And the answer is mishum for them to have an official lahu. The answer is because they had a lot of children. Namely, in other words, the Rashbam says, they had, you think of it, it means, in other words, there were a lot of Yisraelim. Their fathers had passed away in the desert, and they themselves were not 20 years old when they came into Eretz Yisrael, nor did they have, again, if we say the Boy Aret, the Schalka Aret, then you can't go according to their fathers who left Mitzrayim, because according to that opinion, they themselves have to be 20 years old in order to even be in the running for getting a portion. So now they're saying that there's a lot of us, that there's a lot of us who are going to end up without a portion altogether. that would be a way of explaining what their objection was to Yoshua. That Ashbam also points out in that connection, you would also have to say that they wouldn't have any other relative. For example, if their father had brothers, then still, according to the opinion of the Boy Aretz and the Schalka Aretz, we still go back to the previous generation who left Mitzrayim and we divide it. So we would have to say, says that Ashbam, we're talking about that evidently a lot of these tefillim, a lot of these young men who were below 20 years old did not have a relative from whom they could, from, in the collateral line over there, from whom they could inherit, and therefore there would in fact end up being people who are not getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael at all, and therefore they're complaining to Yeshua, what are we supposed to do? We have there's a lot of us who are not going to get. In fact, there are Mephoshim on the Pasuk who explain that not only that, you have, as it is, in the census, in Parashas Pinchas, you have the Shevet had increased by 20,000 and some, but in addition, when they came into Eretz Yisrael, during the years when they were conquering and starting to divide Eretz Yisrael, the Shevet had increased even more, and therefore now they're complaining that our families are large and we're going to each be getting a small portion in Eretz Yisrael. That said, there are Rishonim who learn that we don't necessarily mean that that we're Yisraelim. They're saying, in other words, that Poshet, we are exactly that we have a larger number of children who have been born in the desert and whose parents are still alive, and even more so now after we came into Eretz Yisrael. And the result is, even the Boya Aretz, the Schalka Aretz, fine, you have one person who was 20 at the time of the census in Parashas Pinchas, but since then he's had a bunch of children, and now you have, then it's a large family and only a small plot of land to support them. So therefore they're complaining to Yosef. Therefore, they're complaining to Yoshua and saying we ought to get a larger portion in Eretz Yisrael. In the end, by the way, the pasuk. So the Gemara now is going to quote shortly the pasuk that Yoshua answers them. He tells them go to the forest. In part, the Gemara is going to douse in that pasuk, but in Poshet Pshat, Yoshua tells them the fact is I can't give you a larger territory. However, in your territory, those areas that are forested, if you go and clear the forests over there, you'll have a large amount of space that you're able to build cities and settle in. So you'll have enough room after all. There is actually an interesting explanation the Malbim gives on the Psukim. You find in Psukim when it describes the territory of Shevet Yosef, of Menashe and Ephraim, It mentions that there were actually cities in the territories of nearby Shvatim that belonged to them. So the Malbim actually explains that that was an adjustment Yehoshua made. He couldn't adjust the actual borders of the Shvatim because those were determined by Gurul and Ruach HaKodesh and the Urim V'Tumim, and et cetera, as the Gemara is going to explain later on in the Perek. But he learns that Yehoshua was able to adjust by saying that at least, fine, there are a lot of you, then fine, we'll take some cities that are in the borders of adjacent Shvatim, and those cities themselves, just not the land around them, will belong to you. In any case, that was the complaint of Shevet Yosef. So again, if we say the Yotzim Mitzrayim Neskalka Aretz, then their complaint is a little easier to understand because they had increased by so much in the Midbar. If you say the Boi Aretz Neskalka Aretz, then there's still the complaint because there are a lot of Tfalim, there are a lot of under 20s who lost their parents, as the Rashbam learns, or under 20s who still have their parents but who were born after the census, as the Ramban and other Rishonim explain, and therefore they're complaining about that. So the Gemara says, Amar Abai, Shmamina, Lehav Chad Delay Shotel. So Abai says, actually, you see from that whole conversation, and you see from this whole thing of Benos Tzlochad and the complaint of Shevet Menashe, that you see from that, in the end, there was not one single person who entered Eretz Yisrael who did not wind up getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael somehow or other. Meaning, in other words, if it weren't for Abaye telling us that, if it weren't for analyzing the Pesukim, You would think, based on everything we said before, there may well have been people who entered Eretz Yisrael without a portion of their own. Because if you say Le'yotzim Mitzrayim Neschalka, then you could have, then you would say anybody who was less than 20 when they left Mitzrayim wouldn't get a portion in Eretz Yisrael because, their father had passed away in Mitzrayim and they themselves were below 20 by the first census. And if you said you went according to the second one, then conceivably you could have somebody who was born in the Midbar and was less than 20 and doesn't get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. So no, it came out, Hashem arranged it, that there was not a single one of the people who left Mitzrayim, who was less than 20 and was a Yosin, or that couldn't at least inherit from one of his relatives, from his brother or whatever. So according to Lebo Yaretz, the Schalka Aretz, everybody who came into Eretz Yisrael who was less than 20 years old, then they would have an ancestor, they would have a father who left Mitzrayim, and they would get a portion. So nevertheless, it came out that there wasn't anybody who was left without land at all. Because Abaye says the if there was any such situation where there would be somebody who doesn't get a portion, then he should have complained also, and the pasuk would have recorded it for us. Just like we have Bnos Tzlochad's complaint is recorded in the Torah, and just like we have Shevet Yosef's complaint is recorded in Sefer Yoshua, if there was anybody else in that situation, then it would have mentioned it as well. V'chitema, now you're going to answer the Tzavach V'ahani Kasvikra. You could argue maybe the Pasuk only records complaints that actually resulted in a change to the matter. So with Benoist Tzlafchad, they complained or they argued that they should get a portion, and in fact it worked out. Hashem decided in their favor. And you're going to argue that with Shevet Yosef as well. Nope. The fact is, Shevet Yosef complained and said that we should be entitled to a larger portion, the Loyahani, and it didn't actually help. They didn't get a larger portion out of Israel because of Inukra, and yet the Pasuk records their complaint. So therefore, we see from that, says Abaya. Now, according to the Malbim's explanation, I guess you could say their complaint did have an effect because at least they got cities in other territories. But everybody else who doesn't learn that way, at least according to the straightforward sense of the Pesukim, Shevet Yosef, they complain. Yeshua told them basically tough luck. The divisions of the Eretz Yisrael have been decided by the Urim V'Tumim and everything else, and you can't change them. So then it comes out their complaint in the end had no effect. The fact is they're not getting any larger portion in Eretz Yisrael. And yet the Pasuk takes the trouble to record their complaint. So we see from that, therefore, says Abaya, the Pasuk is mentioning complaints even when they didn't actually have a practical effect. Well, therefore we can see, had there been anybody else who was in a situation where they don't get, then the Pasuk would have recorded that as well. And the fact that it doesn't record that means there wasn't anybody. Hashem arranged it that either that everybody got a portion in Eretz Yisrael, whether we say L'yotz Mitzrayim, or whether we say L'boya Aretz, N'schalka Aretz, either way, Hashem manipulated things and arranged things such that a person is always going to get a portion, whether through himself, whether through his father, whether through his father's brothers, etc. So the Gemara says, though, that's not really a solid proof. Because you could say the reason why the complaint of Shevet Yosef was recorded is in fact because, even though it didn't help, because Hosef Eitz Toiva Kamash Malon. Because you could say that from the psukim, from the story of Shevet Yosef's complaint, you learn an Eitz Toiva. You learn good advice. So in other words, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain. Meaning, in other words, so you could say that no, the Pasuk's not going to bother recording every single person who came to Yeshua with a complaint. Here, where there came out an Eitz HaToiva because of it, then therefore Hashem took the trouble to tell Yeshua to record it in his Sefer. But that doesn't mean necessarily that there may not have been other people who were in a situation, they're not getting what they think they should get in Eretz Yisrael, and they come to Yeshua with complaints, but the Pasuk doesn't record it because there's nothing particular that we learn from that. Namely, what is the Eitz HaToiva? The boiler initially is the Huri Me'ein Abisha. A person needs to be careful to protect himself from an Ayin Hara. So, V'hainu d'ka'amu l'hu Yoshua. Namely, Yoshua tells them, d'chtiv, Yoshua answers them when they're saying we have such a large number of us. And by the way, worth mentioning in this connection, they use the expression, the Gemara doesn't quote this part of the Pasuk, but they're saying that there are a lot of us, Asher ad koi berchani Hashem. Hashem has blessed us to such a degree. The word koi is 20 and 5. And in fact, Bala Torah makes an interesting point. The amount of difference between the first and second census, between Parshas Bamidbar and Parshas Pinchas, in that Shevet is 20,500. They went from 32,200 to 52,700, so it's a difference of 20,500. So they're hinting at that with the word koi representing. We have an increase of 20 as in thousands, and an increase of 5 as in hundreds, and therefore there are a lot of us. So Yeshua answers them. He says so he says to them, "V'hainu kamal of Yeshua." The pasuk continues, "V'yomer aleim Yeshua im am rav ata." If you are such a numerous people, "Alei l'cha hayara." Then go up to the forest. So in a simple sense, Yeshua is telling them again, there's a lot of forested areas in your territory. Go chop down the trees over there and you'll have lots of cleared land that then you can use to build cities and then farms and so forth. But the Gemara Darshins, Omaluhu, it means Yeshua is also telling them that, you're telling us how many of you there are. Go hide yourself in the forests where there aren't so many people. And by the way, while you're there, you'll be chopping down the trees and clearing land. meaning, in other words, the Rashbam says, it's hard to say that he's just telling them an Eitz HaToiva to chop down the trees, because what's the chiddush in that? Of course, whatever land they have in their territory, let them do with whatever they want. And of course, he's not giving them extra territory outside their portion. So they don't need him to tell them, go chop down the trees in your portion. They could do that on their own. So therefore, the Gemara is doubting that he's telling them, go hide in the forest, so that an Ayin Hara does not affect you because you're boasting of how large your Shevet is. So you could say that that's why the Pasuk records that exchange, is to tell us that point about that he's giving them advice against Ayin Hara. Actually, interestingly, Ben Yehoyada has a different explanation of what we see about being careful from an Ayin Hara. He says we see it actually in the words that Shevet Yosef themselves use. When they come and tell Yeshua, there are so many of us, they don't just say there are so many of us, they use the expression, Ad Asher Ad Koi Berchani Hashem, that Hashem has blessed us to such a degree. So meaning, in other words, that they themselves are realizing we shouldn't just boast of how large we are to protect ourselves against an Ayin Hara. An effective way to do that is to recognize that Hashem is the one who gave us that goodness. because there are a number of explanations what the how exactly is Ayin Hara supposed to affect a person anyway, because somebody else looks at something or someone, therefore it should have a bad effect. There's a number of different explanations among Mephoshim how exactly it works, but one idea is that when a person is flaunting his good fortune or whatever, and it causes other people to be jealous of him, then it causes Hashem to start judging and seeing, well, does he taka deserve that? So now when they're acknowledging openly that this is Hashem gave it to us, then that blunts that harsh judgment against them. Anyway, so Ben Yehoyada explains that the effect against the Ayin Hara is actually in what they say, but in addition, there's also Yoshua saying, if that's not enough, then go hide yourselves in the forests. Omrule, but the Gemara continues, now this is not in the Psukim, but this is the Gemara Darshins, that this was the continuation of the conversation. Omrule, they told him, we don't need to do that. Anan Mizara de Yosef, we are from the descendants of Yosef. Dole Shalta Be'en Abisha. And Ayin Hara is ineffective against it. Actually, the Rashbam says, we do actually have a hint here in the Pasuk, because they continue, Lo Yimotze Lanu Ha'or. The mountain is not going to be found for us. Now, in the simple sense, what they're saying by that is, you're telling us, go clear areas in the mountains, and we can settle over there. The fact is, they're saying that mountainous area is not really, we don't really have it. It's not enough for us, even if we settle that whole area. It's not going to be enough for us. But now that Rashbam is saying, in terms of the Gemara's Derasha, it means they're also saying that the mountain is unnecessary for us. The mountain, which has the forest on it, is unnecessary for us to hide in there, because we're immune to the Ayin Hara. Ayin Hara is ineffective against Shevet Yosef. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, in Yaakov's Baracha to the Shevet, Bein Poras Yosef, Yosef is a fruitful son, Bein Poras Alei Oyin, a fruitful son, alay oyin. So the simple meaning of alay oyin means on the well. But I'll teach you alay ayin, alay oily ayin. Don't read alay ayin on the well or on the spring or whatever, but rather oily ayin, that they overcome and they surmount. They're higher than the ayin, than the Ayin Hara. There are various other explanations and gersois among the Rishonim what exactly the Drosha is. One is that we don't even need to change the word Alei to Olei, but rather the word Alei itself we can re-understand as Ali, like go away. Go away, Ayin, you have no power. Go away, Ayin Hara, you have no power over Shevet Yosef. Whatever the case, Shevet Yosef is immune to the Ayin Hara. So they're saying that we don't need to worry about it. Rabbi Yosef of Chanina, Omer Mehacha, Rabbi Yosef of Chanina says we have a different pasuk expresses the same point earlier in Yaakov's bracha to Shevet Menashe and Ephraim. He says v'yidgu l'roiv v'karav ha'aretz, they should multiply like fish in the land. Meaning, mad dogim shabayam, my machas malehem, just like fish in the sea are covered by water, va'ena ayin shaletas behem, and therefore an eye is not able to see them, and therefore they're immune to ayin hara. Af zara shal Yosef, ena ayin shaletas behem, the same way the descendants of Yosef, the ayin hara has no power over them. Elsewhere, the Gemara explains that Shevet Yosef was zoicha to that bracha because Yosef controlled his eyes when it comes to the whole matter of Potiphar's wife. And he didn't look where he wasn't supposed to. So for that, he and his descendants gained that bracha of being immune to Ayin Hara. Elsewhere, the Gemara mentions, in fact, in that connection, first of all, it mentions Reb Yochanan, and it says it was from Shevet Yosef, and therefore one time when the Chachamim asked him, isn't he concerned about an Ayin Hara, then he answers with the same point that he's from Shevet Yosef. But there's actually, we find that actually, in a certain sense, the whole Jewish people are considered to descend from Yosef. In the sense that Yosef supported the whole Jewish people during the years in Mitzrayim, and therefore he's considered almost on the level of the Avos. And the Gemara in Brachas has an expression that if you have a person is concerned about a situation of Ayin Hara, then he should say a certain line that includes the point, I am from Shevet Yosef, on whom Ayin Hara has no effect. So in short, they're telling Yehoshua, you're telling us that we have to go to the forest in order to be safe from an Ayin Hara. We don't have to worry about that because we're Shevet Yosef and we're immune to that in the first place. And Maushah points out the word Ya'ar itself stands for the abbreviation Yisalik Ayin Ra, that the being in the forest will take away the Ayin Hara, and they're telling him we don't have to worry about that. Okay, in any case, the point is, the Gemara is saying, so the Pasuk may have recorded this whole discussion between Shevet Yosef and Yeshua, not because any practical change in the division of Eretz Yisrael came about as a result of it, but rather because from it we learn this whole thing about Ayin Hara. That doesn't mean necessarily that there may not have been other people who didn't get a portion for 1 week because they didn't have a father who left Mitzrayim at age 20, or according to the Yotzei Mitzrayim, Neschalka Aretz, or vice versa, they themselves were below 20 when they came into Eretz Yisrael. So it may well be, here Abaya was telling us that in fact there was no such situation, and every single person ended up getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael somehow, because otherwise it would have recorded his complaint. So now the Gemara is saying maybe not necessarily. Maybe there were such people, and the Pasuk doesn't record their complaint because nothing practical came of it. Next, we said in a Braisa before, there had been a Braisa that discussed details that after we went through the three opinions of how Eretz Yisrael was divided among Yotzei Mitzrayim, among Voi Haaretz, or either one. So then the Braisa had continued. Meraglim, as far as the Meraglim who lost their portion in Eretz Yisrael, Yeshua the Kalev, not the Chalkam, Yeshua and Kalev got the portions that would have gone to them. Meaning, as we learned over there, it means, in other words, even if the Meraglim left children, and ordinarily those children would have Yarshin land in Eretz Yisrael, at least by virtue of their fathers, the Meraglim who left Mitzrayim over 20 years old, but the Meraglim forfeited it, and therefore it went to Yeshua and Kalev. So the Gemara says, Menahani Mili, where do we see that? Omar Ola, the Omar Kro, because the Pasuk says after it describes what happened, how it describes how the Meraglim died, so it says, V'Yeshua bin Nun, V'Chola bin Yefuna, Chayu min ha'anashim ahem. It says, Yeshua bin Nun and Chola bin Yefuna lived from among those people. Now, my Chayu, what do you mean by the word Chayu? We lame a Chayu mamash, do you just mean exactly what it sounds like, they lived? What's the Chiddush? You have a different pasuk that tells us that. When it lists at the end of the census in Parashas Pinchas, it says not among all these people who were counted, not one of the ones from the original census was still there. No, not one man was left. Except for those two. So we know that they survived all the years in the Midbar. The pasuk doesn't have to tell us. Ela my choyu. So what does the word choyu mean? Shechoyu b'chelkam means they lived in their portion in Eretz Yisrael. Marsha points out Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz Hachayim. So here the Meraglim forfeited their portion in Eretz Yisrael, and there's even an opinion in Sanhedrin that they lost their portion in Masechta Sanhedrin in Perek Chelek that they lost their portion in Olam Haba as well, which is the real Eretz Chaim. In any case, Yeshua and Kalev gained their portion in Eretz Yisrael as well as the portion that would have gone to the Meraglim, So that's the Choyu, means they lived, and they actually inherited their portion. Bala Torah, now the Pasuk points out that if you take the letters of Atbash, of the word Choyu, and you take the Gematria of those letters, then you have the Gematria of the word Bechelkam, which means that they actually inherited their portion, and they took it over. Next, that same Braisa had said, Misloinen in Vardas Korach, the complainers in the Midbar. Now, on the face of it, Misloinen means the various people who complained at different times in the Midbar. And Adas Korach, we know what that is. So now the Gemara is going to analyze that part of the Braisa. So the Braisa had said, Lohola and Chelik Baret, they did not have a portion now to Israel. So the Gemara asks, "Well, Tanya, we learn in a different brayse, Meraglim Misloinen and Vadas Korach Yeshua v'Kolav Not L'Chelkam." He was saying that the brayse that we quoted on Kuf Yud Zayin on the days says, as far as the Meraglim Yeshua and Kolav got their portion, but as far as the Misloinen and Vadas Korach, they forfeited their portion entirely, and there's no particular person who took it over. Namely, it just means that everybody else's portion and their shevet was enlarged a little bit because of them. So you have, let's say, for example, among Adas Korach, you have, let's say, Dosan and Aviram, they were from Shevet Reuven, so now the result is that their portion in Eretz Yisrael was forfeited. So fine, it means that it wasn't forfeited completely. It means that Shevet Reuven now gets, each person in Shevet Reuven gets a slightly larger sliver of land in Eretz Yisrael than they would have because Dasa and Aviram aren't there. And the same thing, and the same thing with the Mesloyanim. But here we have another Braisa that says that Yeshua and Kalev got their portion. So meaning, in other words, let's say with Dasan and Aviram's portion, according to that, it didn't remain within Shevet Reuven, it went to Yeshua and Kalev. So what is it? And the answer is like Kasha. The answer is there's no Kasha. It is true that the Braises contradict each other, but it depends how we look at it. Mar Makash Mesloyanim Lamaraglim, the second Braisa that we just quoted, that says that all of that was given to Yeshua and Kalev, he compares the Mesloninim to the Meraglim. And since by the Meraglim it's clear that Yeshua and Kalev got their portion, because we just said, so therefore, so when it comes to the Mesloninim and Adas Korach, then this Tana holds that the same thing was true of them. And the first Braisa on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis does not make that comparison. So he says, true, Meraglim, it says in the Pasuk, but as far as the Mesloninim, we have no source for that, so therefore we have no reason to say that it went to Yoshua and Kalev. We say that it would just remain within the Shevet. So the Tanya, as in fact we learn in another Braisa that helps clarify the matter. So the Rashbam explains, in other words, one way of looking at it, we could say that since when Slofchad's daughters come with their argument, they mention that Slofchad was not among the Meraglim or the Mesoninim or Adas Korach, so therefore we can learn that says that opinion that we have a hekesh between all of them. So what applies to one applies to all of them. Whereas the other opinion says that no, because the pasuk doesn't say v'hanoyadim, it doesn't have a vova there, it just says hanoyadim. So therefore it means it's a separate thing. The Meraglim is one thing, and Noyodim al Hashem Adas Korach is a different thing. So the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, let's analyze the words that Bnos Slofchad used, Avinu Mespa Midbar, when they say our father died in the Midbar, Zet Slofchad, that refers to Slofchad, okay, there's no real chiddush in pointing out that. We know that their father's name was Slofchad, but that's just by way of introduction to the rest of the Braisa. They continue. They say he was not part of the congregation. What congregation? Meaning they're saying that Zadas Meraglim. He was not part of the congregation of the Meraglim. He was not one of the ten Meraglim themselves. The ten Meraglim themselves are called Eda. In fact, the very fact that a minion consists of ten people, we learn from the fact that there were ten bad Meraglim and they're called an Eda. This was actually in Tanya a day or two ago. We learn Gzeira Shavah from the word that says Vinikdashti b'soich b'nei Yisrael, and you have Hibod l'mitoicha Eda Hazos. So we learn Gzeira Shavah that an Eda over there means ten, and therefore that means that a minion consists of ten people. Anyway, so when they say Behulah Hoyd b'soicha Eda, they mean he was not one of those ten Meraglim. So therefore, he shouldn't have forfeited his portion in Eretz Yisrael. Hanoi Odim al Hashem, they continue those who assembled against Hashem. Elo Mesloninim, that refers to the Mesloninim, to the ones who complained against Hashem in the Midbar. And Ba'adas Korach, and when it continues in the congregation of Korach, Kamashmoi, then that means exactly what it sounds like, the people who joined together with Korach. So they're saying that Slofchad was not part of any of those groups. So therefore, he shouldn't have forfeited and his portion in Eretz Yisrael, but now that he doesn't have sons, what do? So therefore, so we see that there were three groups mentioned in the pasuk: the Meraglim, the Mesloninim, and Adas Korach. So now, Mar Makish Mesloninim, the Meraglim. So now, one Braisa, the one that we learned just now at the beginning of this part of the Sugya, says that we have a Hekesh then, since the Mesloninim are mentioned right after the Meraglim, that it means the same thing applies to both of them. Since the Meraglim's portion in Eretz Yisrael was given to Yeshua and Kalev, then the same thing is true as far as the Mesloninim. Or Ma'alog Makish Mesloninim Lemeraglim, whereas the other opinion does not hold of that Hekish. And because, again, because there's no vav between them, if it had said, v'hu lo heyu b'secha eda v'hanoyadim, then it would mean that, yes, we compare them, but without the vav, says this opinion, which is the author of the Braisa, Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, says that no, then the noyadim al Hashem and Adas Korach is a separate group. Yes, they forfeited their portion in Eretz Yisrael, which is why Vinoy Slavchad are pointing out that he wasn't in those groups, but their portion was not forfeited and sent out of their shevet and given to Yeshua and Kalev, but rather it was redivided among the shevet themselves. Okay. So the Gemara points out, V'omaleta popa baya. Now if we're saying the Mislonim over here, the Mislonim, it sounds like, I mean, you have many times when the Jewish people complained in the Midbar. You have over and over in the Psukim, you have the expression Vayiloinu on that the people complained against Moshe. So the question is, you're telling me that it was a very substantial portion of the people. Maybe not every single person, but at least when you have Vayiloinu Ha'am over and over, then it means it was a very large fraction of the people. So V'omaleta popa baya ulamandim makish misloinim l'meraglim, according to the opinion that the misloinim are like the meraglim, meaning, in other words, therefore, that you're saying that Yeshua and Kalev got their portion, ichbu Yeshua v'Kalev v'Yorosu v'Kula Eretz Yisrael, does it come out there therefore that Yeshua and Kalev got such a large increase in their Nachla and they ended up taking over most of Eretz Yisrael? Because after all, it's one thing if you say the Mislonim each time forfeited their portion in Eretz Yisrael, but it remained within their Shevet. Okay, so it means their Shevet is still taking over that territory in Eretz Yisrael, and it means each person is getting a bit of a larger portion than they otherwise would have. But if you're telling me that, if you're telling me they all went to Yeshua and Kalev, so every single Shevet Nachla was reduced by that much and went to Yeshua and Kalev, the fact is that Ashbam says, if we look at the Psukim, we find Kalev was given the area of Hebron, Yeshua was given a city in Eretz Yisrael in the territory of Shevet Ephraim called Timnas Serach. We don't really find that there was such a large portion of Eretz Yisrael that went to them. So if you're telling me the Mislonim lost their portion in Eretz Yisrael and it went to Yeshua and Kalev, then what's going on over here? The Maharshal actually discusses the Rashbam over here, mentions the point that it wouldn't literally mean all of Eretz Yisrael. It would mean most of Eretz Yisrael, but okay, because otherwise it meant all the Jewish people. There's no reason to single out Meraglim and Adas Torah. Then he goes on to point out that what's the Habam in it anyway? Because they complained, for example, in Morah, right after Kriyas Yamsuf, they complained about water. You know, they didn't have water. You're going to tell me because of that they should forfeit their portion in Eretz Yisrael? Adarabi, you see from the Psukim over there that Hashem is Shom Samlai Chokul Mishpat Shom Niso, and Hashem is telling them Im Shamoya Tishma. So what Mislonim would we be talking about anyway? And he goes on that, so he goes on and discusses, and discusses in detail what when Rapapa is asking about the Mislonim, what Mislonim is he thinking of? So he ends up saying he's thinking of the ones maybe who complained when the Meraglim came back with their report. So fine, we would talk about the Meraglim, then we would talk about the Mislonim, meaning what happened. The Meraglim came back, but there were 10 of them came back with a bad report, and that night, Vayisu Koloid or Vayufku, everybody was crying, all the men were crying that night. So now, the Gemara is assuming, or Papa is assuming, that they are the Mislonim, who are described over here, and we're saying, once they said, we don't want to go into Eretz Yisrael, then maybe therefore they forfeited their portion in Eretz Yisrael. But again, the question is, and in fact, you see from the following psukim, Hashem says, yeah, they're not going to go into Eretz Yisrael. Their children are going to go in. But the question is that, the question still is then that if you're telling me that their portion went to Yeshua and Kalev, well, then it means Yeshua and Kalev would have gotten a substantial portion of Eretz Yisrael. Omalei, so Rabbi answers him, Mislonim Sheba Adas Korach Kamrinim. We don't mean when we say Mislonim Va Adas Korach, we don't mean two separate groups, Mislonim, those who complain, and separately Adas Korach. We mean the Mislonim of Adas Korach, meaning in other words, Adas Korach would be Korach himself and his family, and Mislonim Vadas Korach would be the 250 Roshei Sanhedrin who went along with it. So we're saying they forfeited their portion in Eretz Yisrael, and that portion was given to so according to one opinion, that portion also went to Yeshua and Kalev, and according to the other opinion, that portion was redivided among their among the rest of their Shevet. But the rest of the Mislonim, the rest of the people who complained in the Midbar, no problem. They themselves didn't forfeit their portion because of it. They themselves didn't make it alive into Eretz Yisrael. Their descendants did. Their children did. But nevertheless, their children definitely, according to both opinions, received their respective portions. And then the Rashash gives a different argument. The Rashash says maybe the Mislonim that we're talking about when we say Mislonim Ba'adas Korach, maybe we mean over here is you have after the story, after Korach, after the whole thing with Korach and his descendant and his family and all of their hangers on getting swallowed up into the desert, after that you have a pasuk that says that people complained to Moshe and said, Atam Amitim as Am Hashem, what are you doing? You caused Jews to die, and then there was a plague. So maybe that would be Mislonim Ba'adas Korach. Okay, one way or the other, we're not talking about such a large fraction of the Jewish people. Okay, the Gemara continues. Well, Amar Leh Papa Abaya, then Papa has another question for Abaya. Going back to, again, the different opinions about how Eretz Yisrael was divided, it's easy to understand, according to the opinion, that Eretz Yisrael was divided based on those who left Mitzrayim and were counted in the first census. So later on, after the Pasuk, when the Pasuk describes in Sefer Yehoshua how Shevet Yosef received their territory, Menashe and Ephraim received their territory, so the Pasuk says, Heinrichtiv, Vayiklu Chavle Menashe Asorah. It says that Menashe received 10 large portions in Eretz Yisrael. So we don't mean the individual portions per person. We're talking about large areas of land that then were divided individually among the individual families. So how do we get 10? So we say, so very simple. Shita, the Shita Bate Ovis. You have 6 that go to the 6 Bate Ovis, because in the Pasuk before that, and also in the census in Parashas Pinchas, it mentions that you had the various sub-families, the various clans of Shevet Menashe. You have, there was Machir, there was Gilad, and you have Gilad's various children. Each of them formed a large family of a couple of thousand people. So you have 6. So each of them got one large territory, which then was split up among the individuals. Va'arba did who? And then you have Bnos Tzlachot, themselves got 4 portions, namely the portion that would have gotten to Tzlofchad, because again he was one of Yotzei Mitzrayim, 2 portions of Chefers, because Tzlofchad was a Bechor, as we learned in the Mishnah. And then also you would have that Tzlofchad had a brother, as the Gemara is going to point out soon. He had a brother who passed away in the Midbar without any children, and Tzlofchad would have inherited his portion, and therefore it goes to his daughters. So that's the 10 then. But if you say that Eretz Yisrael was divided based on those who came into Eretz Yisrael, then you really only have 8. Shita de Shita Bate Ovis. Again, you have 6 for the 6 Bate Ovis, the 6 large subfamilies of Shevet Menashe. Utsurei did who? And then all you would have is 2 portions that go to Bnos Tzlofchad. Namely, again, Tzlofchad himself did not make it into Eretz Yisrael, so if we say the boy Oritz Neschalka, then we don't have a portion of his own. All we have is, we have Chazorah, we have that the land that Hefer's various children would have gotten returns to Hefer, and then it's redivided among Hefer's descendants, Hefer himself having been one of those who left Mitzrayim. So now all of his children are inheriting, and Bnos Tzlofchad would get a double portion because Tzlofchad was the Bechor. So all you'd have then is 2 portions for Bnos Tzlofchad plus 6 for the 6 Bate Ovis, so you only have 8. So according to that opinion, then how is the Pasuk saying that there were 10, that there were 10 of them, that there were 10 portions? So Tereshit Batravas, or Teredid Hu Hotmanya. So you have only eight. So the Gemara answers back, Vili Taimeich, nu, according to your Svara, or Papa, that you're asking the question, Ulamanda Omer Yotz Mitzrayim Neschalka Oretz, even if you say that Eretz Yisrael was divided based on those who left Mitzrayim, you still on the face of it don't have 10. Keshavu, you really only have 9 on the face of it, because you still have 1 for Tzlachar and 2 for the portions of Chefer. Ela my islach meimer. How do you get the 10th portion according to you? Chad achad de abba havelahu. Tzlafchad had one brother who passed away in the desert childless, and therefore his other brothers, Tzlafchad being one of them, inherit his portion, and then it goes to his daughters. Chachinami, the same way. You can answer, even if you say the boy earth and schalka earth, today achad de abba havelahu. You would say that Tzlafchad had 2 brothers who passed away childless in the desert. So therefore, so again, you have Laboya Aretz and Schalka Aretz, but these brothers were not among Boya Aretz. So instead, all the other surviving brothers get it, and they would have gotten it by being Yotzim Mitzrayim. Instead, it goes back to Chefer, and then it gets redivided among their brothers. So Benos Tzlafchad, they therefore get a portion from what their father would have gotten from his 2 brothers, from his 2 brothers, Yerusha. So that Ashbam explains, in other words, that what happened was Chefer passed away, and then these brothers were alive, and then therefore then and then later on they passed away, and therefore they yaushin from him, and now each one goes to his brother. Tosfos discusses that and has some questions on it, and says that So it comes out, in other words, the point is, if those brothers of Tzlafchad had passed away before Chefer, then in fact we wouldn't say that it would go back to Chefer, because then since if we're saying the boy haaretz, the schalka haaretz, they were not among boy haaretz. So the Rashbam explains, in other words, that Rav Papa, who asked the question, figured, sure, it's easy enough to say that Tzlafchad had one brother who passed away, because we're going to see that from later on, the Gemara is going to darshan from Psukim, how many, what was going on over here, but to say that there were 2 brothers, and we don't really have a pasuk that says that, then it seems very hard to say that, but Abaya tells him, nevertheless, so once we're saying that there was 1, then it's not a problem to say that there were 2, and to use that to explain according to the opinion that says the boy or it's the schalka or it's. So the Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, when Hashem tells Moshe after Bnos Tzlafchad's argument, Hashem tells him nothing tikkun lahem. So the expression is the expression of the Pasuk is, you know, that Bnos Tzlafchad are speaking correctly, nothing tikkun lahem achuzas nachla. You should certainly give them a portion of inheritance b'soich achei aviyem, together with their father's brothers, v'havarta es nachlas aviyem lahem, and you should pass along the inheritance of their father to them. So the Braisa darshins. The Braisa Darshins, the wording in the pasuk nosen titen lahen, when it says you should certainly give to them zu nachlas avihen, that means the nachla their father himself would have gotten because he was from Yotz Mitzrayim. The soich achei avihen, when it continues among their father's brothers, zu nachlas avihen, that refers to the nachla that would have gone to their grandfather Chefer, and Tzlafchad gets a portion of it. And when it says you should pass along the nachla of their father to them, zuchelik b'chora, that refers to that they should get the portion of b'chora that Tzlafchad would have gotten being the firstborn. So the Braisa finishes off. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Afchelik Achi Aviyem Notlu. They also got a portion that would have gone to their father's brother. Shenema Nosen Titin, because the double expression Nosen Titin means that there was an extra portion as well. So therefore, so it means that they had a brother as well. Now, now the Rashbam points out, even the Tanakhama of the Braisa does agree that there was a brother, because, as the Gemara is going to point out later on, which we'll learn tomorrow, Beis Hashem, the fact that it says Achuzas Nachla means that there was a Nachla that he inherited from her brother, from his brother. But the Tanakhama doesn't hold that we should darshan anything from Nos and Titin, because Zirbaturda Koloshim Ne'adam. So he holds that there was just one brother, whereas Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that there were two. So now Abaye says to the Papa, based on that, if you say that there were two brothers of Tzlachot who passed away without any children in the desert, then you could say that's why there's an extra portion that's going to Bnos Tzlachot, and therefore that still has, we can still say therefore that there were four portions altogether going to Bnos Tzlachot. Now when you add to that, the six portions for the six Batei Avos that constitute the rest of Shevet Menashe, then there's the 10 portions that are referred to in the Pasuk in Yeshua. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, analyzing more about this detail of the division of Eretz Yisrael and get into a more detailed discussion of Bnos Tzlachot's arguments and all of that.
Shkayach.
Here.